Hello and welcome to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for today. It is Thursday, June 17. I'm your reader, Kathleen. From the front page of the Gazette this morning, the headline, Triple Murder Suspect Says Intruder Killed Family. This story by Kat Russell. A college student's account that he woke to the sound of gunfire and struggled over a rifle with a masked intruder is a transparent lie, a prosecutor said Wednesday, as Alexander Ken Jackson, age 20, faced his first court appearance on charges he murdered his parents and sister in their northeast Cedar Rapids home. This was a horrendous murder, Assistant Linn County Attorney Ryan Decker said in Linn County District Court. This was more than just a murder. It was an execution of the defendant's mother, father, and sister. Furthermore, the defendant's concocted story of a phantom burglar shows the defendant acted out of malice and calculated intent to get away with these murders. Investigators found no evidence of a forced entry into or burglary at the home at 4414 Oak Leaf Court Northeast in the Oak Creek subdivision, according to a criminal complaint, which hinted at a possible motive for the triple killings. The defendant denied shooting his family members, but admitted his father had recently advised that he needed to find a job or move out of the residence, the criminal complaint stated. Sixth District Judge Casey Jones agreed with Decker to set Jackson's bail for the first-degree murder charges at $3 million cash, $1 million each for the slain family members, Father Jan Perry Jackson, 61, Mother Melissa Fern Jackson, 68, and Sister Sabrina Hannah Jackson, 19. The case marks the city's first triple homicide in nearly 40 years, according to the Cedar Rapids Police Department. According to the criminal complaint, Cedar Rapids police officers were called at 8:23 a.m. Tuesday to the home by Alexander Jackson, who told the 911 dispatcher he and his father had been shot by a male intruder. When police arrived, they found Jan, Melissa, and Sabrina Jackson fatally shot. The victims were each in different rooms of the house, the document states. Court records do not say how many times each had been shot. Alexander Jackson told investigators he was asleep when the attack on his family began, the complaint said. The sound of gunfire woke him, he told police, saying he was shot in the foot while struggling with the intruder. A .22 caliber Browning semi-automatic rifle, police said they believe is the murder weapon, was found in the home. Jackson said he and his father had left it on the fireplace after cleaning it the night before, the complaint states. Public Safety Department spokesman Greg Bulow hasn't released additional details about the firearm, citing the police department's ongoing investigation. He said investigators believe the four Jackson family members were the only people living in the home. Assistant Linn County Attorney Monica Slaughter, who will be prosecuting the case, told the Gazette that investigators presented the case Tuesday to the Linn County Attorney's office. Slaughter and Assistant County Attorney Jordan Shire went to the home Tuesday afternoon and walked through the crime scene with investigators before concluding that Jackson should be charged with the murders. After he was treated at the hospital for his foot wound, Jackson was arrested shortly after 9 p.m. Tuesday and booked into the Linn County Jail. Jackson has no criminal past, Slaughter confirmed. Records do not show any previous calls for police help at the Oak Leaf Court Northeast address. On Tuesday, neighbors who spoke with the Gazette described the family as good neighbors and nice people. Ashok Parikh, who has lived in the neighborhood for 20 years, recalled that the family moved in about 10 years ago. Their house sits across the private road from Parikh's house. I was just talking to Melissa maybe 4 or 5 days ago, Parikh said. He was sitting outside watching crews clear the last of the tree debris left after the August 10, 2020 derecho when Melissa Jackson walked over to say hello. I told her my daughter's friend had just bought a house in Oregon, and they, the Jacksons, are originally from Oregon, so we were talking about that, he recalled. Cedar Rapids Assessor's Office records show the Jacksons bought the house in 2011. In the 10 years they've been neighbors, Parikh said he had never seen or heard anything to indicate there were problems within the family. Alexander and Sabrina were students at the University of Iowa in the College of Liberal Arts and Sciences, according to the Associated Press, and both had attended Kennedy High School in Cedar Rapids. In 2017, as a high school sophomore, Alexander Jackson, an Eagle Scout, worked with Save CR Heritage and other volunteers to paint the historic Frankie House, which the organization had moved and was rehabilitating so that low-income families could move there. During his initial appearance Wednesday, Jackson, clad in a yellow jumpsuit, sat silently while Decker read the criminal complaint detailing the killings. Aside from stating his name at the start of the hearing and requesting a public defender at its conclusion, he did not speak. The judge assigned the case to the Linn County Public Defender's Office and scheduled a preliminary hearing for June 25. Cedar Rapids Public Safety's Bulow said a search of the police department's archives dating to 1959 revealed only two triple murders, including Tuesdays. The previous triple homicide, Bulow said, occurred November 15, 1982, when three family members, including two children, were stabbed to death. Two Cedar Rapids men, Bruce Ferris, who was 23 at the time, and Michael Roan, who was 18, were charged in the deaths. Also on the front page today, Test Iowa to end program July 16. This story by Michaela Ram. With demand for COVID-19 tests waning, sites for Test Iowa, the free statewide testing program, will be shut down by next month, Iowa public health officials announced Wednesday. All five state-operated drive-through locations will stagger closures over the next 5 weeks before the program, which launched in April 2020, ends July 16. Linn County's site on the southwest side of Cedar Rapids will close at 4 p.m. June 24. As COVID-19 vaccines have become more widely available, state officials say demand for testing is at its lowest in more than a year. About 400 tests per day are being conducted across 17 drive-through and clinic sites, according to state officials. State officials also cited significantly decreased coronavirus activity as a reason for the closure. As of Wednesday, 93 of more than 5,500 COVID-19 tests were positive for the virus, or a 1.68% positivity rate, according to state coronavirus data. The Iowa Department of Public Health and the State Hygienic Lab are finalizing plans to provide free at-home COVID-19 test kits to Iowans after the end of the Test Iowa program, but state officials did not release details. More information will be available in the coming weeks, according to the announcement. COVID-19 tests still are available at healthcare providers, pharmacies, and other retail testing sites across the state. The $26 million Test Iowa program was announced by Governor Kim Reynolds during an April 2020 news conference after she signed a no-bid contract with Utah-based Nomi Health. Actor and Iowa native Ashton Kutcher had brought the tech company to her attention. Since its launch, Test Iowa has tested nearly 644,000 individuals for COVID-19, according to state officials. Testing was at its highest on November 23, 2020, when more than 6,700 individuals were tested for the virus. According to the state's coronavirus website, Test Iowa has completed more than 2 million assessments since its launch. The first drive-through testing site opened in Des Moines on April 25, 2020. But within the first weeks of launching, Test Iowa was plagued with problems. It wasn't until May 14, 2020, 3 weeks later, that the state lab was able to validate the Test Iowa equipment and process. News reports from around the state showed many Iowans initially experienced significant delays in receiving their test results. Some samples could not be tested at all. Despite Reynolds' promise the program could run as many as 5,000 COVID-19 tests on a single day, the Gazette reporting found it wasn't until June of 2020 that Test Iowa had reached that benchmark. Records obtained by the Gazette also show officials with the State Hygienic Lab appeared to be caught off guard by the start of the initiative and later questioned the program for its lack of on-site support. In July 2020, Iowa State Auditor Rob Sand released a report stating the program violated state law by failing to report COVID-19 test results to the Iowa Department of Public Health. The report said that once the State Hygienic Lab processed tests, the results were first sent to two private data companies before being sent to the state public health department. Despite issues with the initial rollout, state officials praised Test Iowa for providing a robust data platform to effectively manage its COVID-19 response by tracking virus activity by zip code. State officials continue to encourage Iowans to get tested for COVID-19 if they experience symptoms. People also should be tested if they've been exposed to an individual who has tested positive but have not been fully vaccinated yet. The Public Health Department said it encourages Iowans age 12 and older to be vaccinated against the disease. From the Iowa Today page, this story includes photos of the old Coolidge Elementary. The demolition of Coolidge Elementary School begins Wednesday in southwest Cedar Rapids. The 54-year-old school is the first elementary to be replaced in the school district's 20-year facilities plan. Students this year watched their new school, to be called West Willow Elementary, rise behind Coolidge. Construction of the $25 million school is nearing completion. And also this story by Marissa Payne, Cedar Rapids events offer forum for input on climate plan. The city of Cedar Rapids is hosting events to gather input on its creation of a community climate action plan. Public input events will take place Friday through June 26. The events will educate the community on the process of forming the plan and gather further input after an initial survey was conducted last fall. The Climate Action Plan will aim to strengthen the city's resilience against climate events, reduce carbon emissions, transition to mostly or entirely renewable energy by 2050, and support the health and prosperity of all residents. The committee advising the city on creation of the plan is centering equity in the process. Engagement events will be held in areas of Cedar Rapids identified as having higher social vulnerability. In exchange for input on the plan, city staff will offer resilience-focused tools such as insulated grocery bags, flashlights, and water bottles. 10 Roland Recmobile events are scheduled to include plan engagement, as well as an event Saturday at the downtown library, coinciding with the year's first farmers market. Those unable to attend in-person events may take an online survey at cityofcr.com/climate. Roland Recmobile events will leverage funding through the National League of Cities 2021 Leadership in Community Resilience Program, which helped to add a mobile neighborhood resource center component to the Recmobile van to boost community engagement. New features of the van include signage, digital survey stations, chairs, and outdoor misters. The van allows city staff to bring services and resources to neighborhoods throughout the city, in addition to games and recreational activities. And if you plan to go at the event at the Cedar Rapids Public Library, that will be 7:30 a.m. to noon on Saturday. The event will be held outside under the library awning facing 4th Avenue Southeast and Green Square. In other dates, the Roland Recmobile will appear at Hitter Park Friday, 9:30 to 11:30. On Saturday, it will be at Cleveland Park from 2 to 3:30. Next Monday at Redmond Park, 9:30 to 11:30, and Jaslyn Park, 1:30 to 3:30. In other Iowa Today information, update aims to improve emergency messaging. This story by Gage Miskeman. Upgrades to the emergency notification system, known as Alert Iowa, are intended to make it easier for residents to receive alerts about severe weather and other emergencies. The changes will improve Linn County officials' ability to communicate emergency information directly to residents through phone calls, text messages, emails, and social media, a news release said. Additionally, the system can now translate messages in multiple languages. These upgrades will not only make it easier for us to notify our residents when emergencies happen or we need to share important information, but will let residents choose the best way for them to receive alerts, Linn County Emergency Manager Steve Okonek said. Sign up for Alert Iowa through the Linn County website or by sending a text or downloading an app. Those currently signed up to receive alerts will need to sign up again to be part of the new system. The target date for Linn County to complete the transition to the upgraded system is July 1. And you can create an account at www.linncounty-ema.org or text LINNIA, that's capital LINNIA, to 672-83, or download the Smart 911 app on your phone. And finally, in Iowa City, an Iowa City man set a fire trapping a family. An Iowa City man poured lighter fluid under a woman's upper-level apartment door to start a fire Sunday night, trapping her and four others, police said. Ishmael S. Carter, age 32, had been knocking on the woman's door in the 600 block of East Court Street for 20 minutes, according to a criminal complaint. She could see him through a peephole. After the knock stopped, the woman saw a liquid spilling underneath the door, which resulted in a large fire at 11:14 p.m. The woman, her children, and a boyfriend went to the balcony until firefighters put out the blaze. The fire caused $50,000 in damage, according to a news release. Police said Carter was watching the fire, and witnesses observed him in the building and outside before the fire. Also, police said he was seen buying the lighter fluid, and the bottle was found in a dumpster behind the apartments. Carter was charged with first-degree arson, a felony punishable by up to 25 years in prison. In other Iowa Today news, a fire destroys a pipe organ business in western Iowa. This story from Lake City. Fire has destroyed a western Iowa business that made pipe organs for churches, schools, and customers from around the world, officials said. The fire at Dobson Pipe Organ Builders in Lake City was reported about 4 p.m. Tuesday, officials said. Firefighters found the building engulfed in flames that caused its exterior walls to collapse. One employee of the company was burned when he discovered the fire and tried to put out the flames, according to authorities. The state fire marshal's office said it believes the fire was started by a malfunctioning fan that caused sawdust to ignite. Lake City is about 7 miles northwest of Des Moines. Dobson Pipe Organ Builders was founded in 1974 by Lynn Dobson, a Carroll native who attended Wayne State College in Nebraska, according to the business's website. During his years at the college, he built an organ in a shed on his family's farm that he sold to Our Savior's Lutheran Church in Sioux City, where it is still played. The company has worked on organs in at least two churches in eastern Iowa, according to the Gazette archives, St. Wenceslaus Catholic Church in Spillville and Christ Episcopal Church in Cedar Rapids. And the story accompanies a photo of firefighters from Lake City and surrounding areas battling the fire on Tuesday. And an Iowan has been fined $80,000 for burning railroad ties. A Northwest Iowa man has been ordered to pay an $80,000 fine for burning thousands of railroad ties on his property, despite being told it would violate the law. The Iowa Attorney General's office said Wednesday that John Goldsmith of Sergeant Bluff also was warned he could face a contempt charge and possible jail time if he violated solid waste and open burning laws again. The $80,000 fine was the maximum penalty allowed. The DNR had issued 7 violation notices to Goldsmith since 2000 and sued him in 2020 after he burned the railroad ties. The agency said in its lawsuit that Goldsmith called a DNR employee on August 7, 2018, to say he planned to burn some of the estimated 30,000 railroad ties on his property because it would cost more than his land was worth to dispose of them properly. Goldsmith also barricaded his property to prevent firefighters and local authorities from getting on site and fighting the fire. The fire burned from August 11 to August 14. And an arrest was made in a case of a woman set on fire. This story in Council Bluffs. Police in western Iowa have arrested a woman accused of setting another woman on fire. Lindsay Maves was arrested Monday on charges of attempted murder, arson, and willful injury, Council Bluffs police said. The incident happened at 4:30 a.m. Monday when Council Bluffs officers were called to North 15th Street and found a woman with severe burns outside a homeless services center. The woman was taken to a hospital across the Missouri River in Omaha for treatment. An investigation found that the victim was involved in a disturbance with Mays, who is accused of spraying the victim with a flammable substance and lighting her on fire. Police believe Mays then hit the victim in the face with something as a witness tried to put out the flames. Mays had fled by the time officers arrived. Moving now to the inside page, the Gazette's own editorial today is entitled Rethink Police Officers in Cedar Rapids Schools. When Cedar Rapids introduced school resource officers more than a decade ago, it was not in response to any particular event or threat. Unlike other districts that have brought in cops following shootings, Cedar Rapids school officials just thought it was a good idea back in 2010, and the police department agreed. Given the origin of the program, we worry the police mission in local schools has been poorly defined. Are they there to prevent a tragedy or to patrol typical teenage behavior? In Cedar Rapids schools, it's most often the latter, and black students are overwhelmingly the targets. Black students make up less than 20% of the district's enrollment, but account for more than 60% of criminal allegations during a five-year period analyzed by the Iowa Department of Human Rights. The Gazette's Grace King reported this last week. In 2019 to 2020, the most recent school year under review, black students were more than six times as likely to face legal action than their white peers. Charges against black students increased even during the pandemic-shortened school year, while those against white students declined. The vast majority of charges are initiated by school-based officers, not by calls to police. Police are supposed to collaborate with school administrators, but it's ultimately the officer's discretion whether to file a complaint. Racially disproportionate outcomes in law enforcement are not necessarily evidence of biased policing, but they demand scrutiny at the very least. School officials say their research shows black students commit crimes at a similar rate to white students. Additionally, the largest share of charges at schools are for public order violations, which are much more subjective and discretionary than drugs and violence. Organizers with local black student unions this week shared student survey data about police in schools. It showed most students favor keeping the officers, but also that most students had never seen officers prevent violence. The district's current two-year, $2 million contract with Cedar Rapids Police Department runs through the end of the school year. School officials are considering changes to the agreement to include diversion programs, more training for officers, and better communication with school administrators. Those sound like reasonable reforms, but we challenge the district to think hard about the role police in schools should be. Blanketing our black youth with disorderly conduct allegations should not be part of the job description. And again, that was the Gazette's own editorial. Todd Dorman's column today is titled, Smith Says Reynolds Is Too Extreme. State Representative Raz Smith, Democrat Waterloo, has entered the race for the Democratic nomination for governor. On Tuesday, I asked him a question that's on the minds of a lot of Democrats if they've watched our once purple swing state turn bright Republican red. How do you turn a red state blue, or at least purple? I'm confident that we can talk directly to Iowans. For me, it's not about turning a state red or blue. It's really about ensuring we can provide opportunities for all Iowans to be successful, Smith, age 33, said. As I begin this campaign, while I am a Democrat, my focus is not on having a D or R behind my name. I'm more concerned with the IA, Smith said. It's not surprising a candidate running for governor in a state Donald Trump twice carried easily would talk about de-emphasizing political labels. The Democratic brand has lost flavor in Iowa, particularly in the old industrial centers and county seat towns where the party once scored victories. But in seeking the nomination of a party angered and fired up by the actions and inactions of Governor Kim Reynolds, from her flawed pandemic response to her cruel indifference to the plight of struggling Iowans, Smith's message will need a sharper edge. Unity is commendable, but Democrats with their backs against the wall are itching for a fight. His tone changed when I asked for his take on how Iowa politics veered right. I think attitude reflects leadership, Smith said. We have a governor who has become far too extreme for Iowa, who doesn't really know how to work with the legislature, who is showing that her concern is less about the people of Iowa than favors to donors. That happens when there is a lack of accountability. That happens when folks remain silent to wrongdoing. That happens when people care more about division and power and personal political gain. That's not the Iowa I know, Smith said. Smith led the effort to pass the More Perfect Union Act in 2020, which contained a package of policing reforms. Amid Black Lives Matter protests outside the statehouse, the bill passed unanimously in the House and Senate. Then Smith watched in 2021 as a promise for more reforms was transformed into Back the Blue, a bill cracking down on protests and shielding police from liability. I want to build on that 2020 momentum because that passed 150-0, he said. Smith's district is in Black Hawk County, where COVID-19 sickened and killed workers at the Tyson pork plant. Reynolds' administration failed to coordinate with local officials and trusted Tyson executives to keep workers safe. Instead, managers lied to workers and even placed bets on how many would get ill, according to a lawsuit filed by workers' families. What we saw is a governor who took power away from local governments, who targeted local officials, who wanted to bully those who didn't follow along with her toxic or corrupt culture and agenda, said Smith, who wants to restore local control that the GOP has snatched from local officials. Our job is to meet people where they are, to show them there is a better way, that we can do so much better than this. That's why I'm running for governor, Smith said. And we have one community letter today. Governor Reynolds' immigration policies are mean-spirited. Stupid is as stupid does, says Forrest Gump, to which we can add heartless is as heartless does. I do not attribute stupidity and heartlessness to people. Mean-spirited policy and politics are my focus. Whether policies reflect the people who propose them is something I'll leave up to others to judge. Heartless, however, is what Governor Kim Reynolds has done in her two recent scrapes with immigrant refugees in Iowa. True to her grasp of Iowa slights, in episode 1 in April of this year, she said a firm no to accepting refugee children, contrasting starkly with her willingness to accept refugees coming into the United States when then-President Donald Trump raised the issue in 2019. In episode 2 of Iowa Snipes, the Gazette reported on June 12 that the governor believed potentially 2 of 19 children brought to the state on a controversial federal refugee settlement flight stayed in Iowa. Horror of horrors. Look, we know what it's all about. Smite Biden and do it standing on the heads of 2 innocent kids, likely sponsored by truly generous Iowa nice citizens. And that letter is signed by William Mulcahy from Cedar Rapids. You are listening to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for today. It's Thursday, June 17, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. And now we turn to today's obituaries. In the other notices from Cedar Rapids, Eugene E. Primrose, age 80, died Tuesday, June 15, Papich Kuba Funeral Service, Cedar Rapids. And from West Union, Clarence Bach, age 84, died Wednesday, June 16, Burnham Wood Grau Funeral Home and Cremation Service, West Union. And now moving to the regular notices. From Cedar Rapids, Robert, known as Bob Lee Farenkrog, age 65, died June 15 at his home in Cedar Rapids. The family will announce a celebration of life at a later date. Also in Cedar Rapids, Francis E. Parbs Wingfield, age 85, passed away at Cottage Grove Place Tuesday, June 15, surrounded by her loving family. A visitation will be held from 1:30 until service time at 2:30 Friday, June 18, at Cedar Memorial Park Chapel of Memories. A live stream of the service may be accessed on the funeral home website under the obituary for Francis Wingfield under the video tab, starting at 2:30 Friday, June 18. The interment will be held at the Cedar Memorial Park Cemetery, Garden of the Last Supper. In Independence, Loretta Schumacher, age 91, of Independence, died of natural causes Monday, June 14, at New Aldea Lifescapes, Cedar Falls. Funeral services will be at 10:30 Friday, June 18, at Emmanuel Lutheran Church in Independence. Burial will follow at 2:30 in the Emmanuel Lutheran Cemetery in Williamsburg. Visitation will be at 9 a.m. until services on Friday, June 18, at Emmanuel Lutheran in Independence, and memorials may be directed to the church. From Independence, Patricia C. Colton, age 84, of Marion, formerly of Independence, died Tuesday, June 15, at Hospice of Mercy, Oldorf Hospice House in Hiawatha. Funeral services will be at 11 a.m. Saturday, June 19, at the White Funeral Home in Independence, 400 First Street West. Family burial service will follow at Mount Hope Cemetery. A public visitation will be from 9 a.m. until service time on Saturday at the funeral home. Memorials will be directed to the Hospice of Mercy. Online condolences can be posted www.white-mthope.com. In Iowa City, Janet E. Feuerbach, age 92, died Monday, June 14, at the Solon Nursing Care Center. Funeral services will be held at 11 a.m. Friday, June 18, at the First United Methodist Church in Iowa City, where there will be a time of visitation from 9:30 a.m. until services at the church on Friday. Sunday parking ordinance will be in effect for the streets near the church. Following burial at Oakland Cemetery in Iowa City, family and friends are invited for a reception to be held at the Pleasant Valley Golf Course beginning at 1 p.m. And from Iowa City, Margaret, known as Peg Sue Weldon. Family and friends will celebrate the life of Margaret Weldon Saturday, June 19, at St. Michael's Church in Holbrook. The rosary will be recited at 12:15, followed by a service at 12:30 p.m. Burial will be at St. Michael's Cemetery, and a luncheon will follow in the church hall. Peg died February 27, 2021. Lansing Funeral Home is in charge of arrangements. In Williamsburg, L. Francis Misbach, age 100, of Williamsburg, passed away Monday, June 14, at Highland Ridge Care Center in Williamsburg. Funeral service will be at 10 a.m. Saturday, June 19, at Kloster Funeral Home in Marengo, with Pastor Kirk Statler officiating. Burial will be at Oak Hill Cemetery, Williamsburg. Visitation is from 9 to 10 a.m. Saturday, June 19, at Kloster Funeral Home, Marengo. Memorials may be contributed to the Iowa County 4-H FFA Fairgrounds in Marengo. And lastly, from Marion, Donald A. Luig, age 57, died Tuesday, June 15, at his home. Memorial services at 10 a.m. Saturday, June 26, at Grace Baptist Church in Marion. Iowa Cremation is in charge of arrangements. Moving now to the sports page, this high school softball notebook story by Jeff Linder. Observations from the season's first half. Tops among them, Western Dubuque's quick growth in the MVC. We've passed the midpoint of the 2021 Iowa high school softball season, but this is anything but an intermission. Midway through the fourth week of the regular season, conference races are taking shape and teams are making a push for favorable postseason draws. The Iowa Girls High School Athletic Union expects to release regional brackets late next week. Here are five notable items from the first half of the season. MVC contender. Now in its third summer in the Mississippi Valley Center Conference, Western Dubuque, 16-2 overall, 13-1 in the WAMAC, has the best record in the entire league. The lone blemish came in a split with Iowa City High on June 8. The Bobcats rallied for 3 runs in the top of the 7th inning for a 4-2 second game victory over Linmar Tuesday, completing a sweep. Senior Sydney Kennedy is an all-around star, hitting .548 with 16 doubles and 29 RBIs while compiling an 8-1 pitching record and a 1.92 ERA. Western Dubuque will be favored to sweep its next 3 league doubleheaders. Then it gets tough starting June 23 with Twin Bills against Cedar Rapids Kennedy, Dubuque Hempstead, Iowa City Liberty, Cedar Rapids Jefferson, and Cedar Rapids Prairie. After pitching just 8 innings last year, Anamosa sophomore Emily Waters realized her role in the circle would be expanded with the graduation of Callie Minger. "I knew I'd have a new job," she said. She has done it well, becoming one of the area's most prolific strikeout artists. She has 143 of them in 71 innings on her way to a 10-3 record and a .99 ERA. Waters has good velocity and is adept at hitting corners, and she's a lefty. "I think my ball spins different," she said. Lynx still rule. North Lynn takes a 75-game Tri-Rivers Conference win streak into its Twin Bill tonight at Lisbon. The Lynx, at 21-1, have overcome the loss of 6 starters due to graduation from their 2020 state runner-up team. The team is hitting .409 with 28 home runs, 7 each by Jill Smith and Skylar Benish, 6 by Jenna Lemley. Smith has 40 RBIs. Benish has scored 40 runs. Lisbon, at 18-4, will be a formidable foe behind pitcher Riley Allgood. And a packed WAMAC. Led by Mount Vernon and resurgent Clear Creek Amana, the WAMAC Conference sports 7 ranked squads. A traditional power, 4A, number 13, CCA, has returned to prosperity after 4 straight losing seasons between 2015 and 2019. The Clippers were 14-10 last year. They are bolstered by young pitching. Ashley Webb, 9-2, is a sophomore. Bliss Beck, 4-1, is a freshman. Mount Vernon, at 14-2, has climbed to number 2 in the 3A rankings. The Mustangs have 4 hitters above .450, including leadoff hitter Nadia Telecki, who leads the team in runs with 23, RBIs, 18, and steals, 16. The Mustangs are being pushed in the East Division by 4A number 10 West Delaware, 12-3, 3A number 10 Solon, 16-5, and 4A number 12 Marion, 15-5. In the West, CCA's challengers are 3A number 3 Williamsburg, 12-6, and 4A number 14 Benton Community, 9-6. Highland hasn't yet made its way into the Class 1A rankings, but the under-the-radar Huskies have fashioned a fine resume with 2 seniors on the roster. Highland is 14-2. The top 6 hitters consist of 2 juniors, 2 sophomores, and 2 freshmen. Of those 9th graders, Sarah Burton paces the squad in hitting .480, runs 26, and steals 19, and Peyton Brunn has the team-high 20 RBIs. Junior pitcher Grace Batchelor, 10-2, has a tidy 63-8 strikeout-to-walk rate. In high school baseball, this story by K.J. Pilcher, no pitching showdown as Kennedy sweeps. The results surprised Cedar Rapids Kennedy coach Brett Hoyer. Like many, he expected a low-scoring affair when Iowa City West all-stater Marcus Morgan and the Cougars' Mason Benn took the mound opposite each other. "It didn't play out the way I thought," Hoyer said. "I would have lost a lot of money thinking it would play out the way." The Cougars jumped to a 5-run lead and held off a late rally, dropping the Trojans 8-6 in the opener of a Mississippi Valley Conference baseball doubleheader sweep last night at West High School. Dylan Davis and Wiley Sullivan smacked home runs to power Kennedy past West 10-2 in Game 2. Ben began with 4 shutout innings, striking out 5 in more than 5 innings of work for his second win this season. Morgan entered with a 2-0 mark and a slim 1.42 earned run average. He struck out 11 batters through 5, allowing just 2 earned runs. Those two came in the first inning. Brendan Groth and Ben drew walks and each scored on back-to-back two-out singles with Colby Dolphin and Sullivan. The Cougars, at 14-7, added to their lead in the fourth when Peyton McAfee reached on an error and scored after Max White's single. It was the first of 3 unearned runs for Kennedy, coming with 2 outs. "You have to avoid errors," Hoyer said. "Most teams take advantage of that." Kennedy managed 10 hits against 3 pitchers, including 5 against the West ace. "We've never been able to do that before since he was in ninth grade," Hoyer said. "You don't come into a game thinking you're going to do that at all. You just hope for 2 somehow, some way, and figure out how to make it stand." The Trojans, 10-9, battled back. "He's still working his way back from the surgery," Hoyer said of Ben, who had elbow surgery after last season. "Hopefully having him up to 90-plus pitches, he builds more endurance. It will help with his next start." Hoyer pitched 2 innings of relief for the save, coming in with the tying run at the plate. In the nightcap, Groth had 3 hits and pitched into the 7th and earned the victory in Game 2. From the Hoopla section, lots and lots of activities are listed, and I will give you a very brief if you go on a lot of these. First, Bright Star Under the Stars. If you go, Bright Star is a bluegrass musical by Steve Martin and Edie Brickell. It will be presented by Theater Cedar Rapids at Bruce Moore's Peggy Boyle Whitworth Amphitheater, 2160 Linden Drive Southeast in Cedar Rapids. This will be presented Friday, 7:30 p.m. to July 3. The runtime is 1 hour and 45 minutes with an intermission. Tickets are $25 for single to $100 for a square that seats up to 4. Discounts and other options are available. Contact the TCR box office, 319-366-8591 or theatercr.org. Linden Drive gates open at 6:30 p.m. and parking on site is available. Bring chairs, blankets, picnics, beer and wine are allowed. Bug spray and concessions are available for purchase. In the theater category, opening the 25th annual Putnam County Spelling Bee, June 25th to the 27th, City Circle Theater Company, Coralville, an eclectic group of tweens vie for the spelling championship of a lifetime. This musical comedy won the 2005 Tony and Drama Desk Awards. It's being performed at the Coralville Center for Performing Arts, 1301 5th Street in Coralville. Seating socially distanced, the audience members are required to wear a mask. Tickets are $14 to $24. Call 319-248-9370. And T43. July 1 to 3 at the Giving Tree Theater in Marion. What is it like for a woman when her husband becomes the President of the United States and she is suddenly thrust in the spotlight? This witty and moving script explores the hopes, fears, and loves of Lady Bird Johnson, Pat Nixon, and Betty Ford. In 3 scenes taking place in the family quarters of the White House, just before the end of living there as the wife of a president, each of the women confides alone to the audience. Secrets are spilled about their years and their romances with the men, their unique paths as wives to the White House, and their feelings about imminent retirement. That's at the Giving Tree Theater in Marion, 8 p.m. Friday, Saturday at 2 p.m., and the cost, 8 p.m. Friday and Saturday, 2 p.m. on Sunday, and the cost is $23. And ABT Across America, July 4, Hancher Green, Iowa City. American Ballet Theater dancers are touring America, stopping at the Hancher on the 4th of July. The evening's 50-minute show will be performed without an intermission. Programming will feature Lauren Lovett's La Folia Variations, a work for 8 dancers set to music by Francesco Geminiani. And tickets are available for $5 in advance at hancher.uiowa.edu or $10 at the door, cash only, 4 p.m. on July 4. Music Fest and Food, this story by Diana Nolan for the Gazette. Pure Prairie League fans can get their hands on a collector's item June 25 when the band kicks off its latest tour during the Roundup. A flavorful, festival-blended, award-winning barbecue and hit-making music at the McGrath Amphitheater in downtown Cedar Rapids. Among the various items on the merchandise table will be t-shirts trumpeting the band's 50th anniversary in 2020. And in brief, if you go Pure Prairie League in concert at the McGrath Amphitheater, 6 p.m. June 25th, Music Park gates open at 4 p.m. with Catfish Murphy up first and Orleans at 8 p.m. Barbecue Food Court opens at 11. Tickets are $10 to $40. creventslive.com/events/2020 and go to the band's website, purepraireleague.com. This story by Diana Nolan, new twists on traditional event coming to the McGrath Amphitheater. A flock of seagulls will be swooping into McGrath Amphitheater soon, but these songbirds won't be swiping your meal or otherwise wreaking havoc at the Roundup. This flock of seagulls will be among the bands turning back time during a weekend of classic rock and 80s hits on stage June 24th to the 26th. If you go, the Roundup Barbecue and Music Festival at the McGrath Amphitheater, the food court opens 11 a.m. June 24th to the 26th. Music Park is open from 6 p.m. June 24th and 3 p.m. June 25th and 26th. The music includes Blues Brothers, June 24, Catfish Murphy, Pure Prairie League in Orleans, June 25th, Surf Zombies, Naked Eyes, and a Flock of Seagulls on June 26th. It's free for the food court. You pay for your own food, and $10 to $40 for the concerts. And in Cedar Rapids, believe the hype. Cedar Rapids Taco God opens permanent location after popularizing birria tacos. If you go, it's called The Hype Bar and Grill, located at 1810 6th Street Southwest in Cedar Rapids. Their hours of operation are 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. Monday through Saturday. They're closed on Sunday, with plans to open 7 days a week coming soon. Call them at 319-289-8527 or search Hype Bar and Grill on Facebook. They're also open for carryout and dine-in. And in Iowa City, Sweet Insomnia Cookies is coming to Iowa City. The White Star reopens. The Bluebird Diner opens dining room. Insomnia Cookies, a late-night bakery that has long been a staple in Ames for Iowa State University students, is coming to Iowa City. Signs for the chain's new franchise were spotted in a storefront, 125 East Washington Street. The bakery, which will be open with delivery service as late as 3 a.m., offers warm cookies, ice cream cookie sandwiches, ice cream, and cake. The Gazette could not immediately confirm the opening date in the Iowa City location. And after renovations and under new ownership, White Star Ale House in downtown Cedar Rapids has started serving lunch and dinner again. The restaurant at 305 2nd Avenue Southeast reopened its kitchen on May 12 for the first time since closing in November of 2020. White Star started serving lunch June 14. Lunch is served from 11 to 2. It's been a rough time for all generations, and we're now seeing the light shine through. The restaurant posted on social media last week, "Please support us. We have some great young staff who want to see White Star become one of the best venues for a night out of food, drink, and entertainment in Cedar Rapids." A hospitality manager for the restaurant told the Gazette that they are slowly introducing and testing new menu items as renovation of the party room continues. And the Bluebird Diner in Iowa City reopened its dining room at 330 East Market Street on June 14. The restaurant's dining room was closed for more than a year due to the pandemic, offering delivery and carryout only. Join us inside or on the patio, the restaurant posted to social media earlier this month. We can't wait to serve you on real plates. The diner is open from 7 a.m. to 2 p.m. Monday through Wednesday and 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Thursday through Sunday. And glowing again, also in the Hoopla section, the annual event will be held at Hawkeye Downs and feature giant kites. The night skies at Hawkeye Downs will be lit with incandescent hot air balloons as Balloon Glow makes its return to Cedar Rapids Freedom Festival. But it won't just be balloons in the air this year. Dozens of huge kites, some of them more than 60 feet long, also will be featured at the event. Great American Kites, based in Polo, Missouri, has a couple hundred large kites in all kinds of eye-catching designs. Aquatic animals, horses, astronauts, Clifford the Big Red Dog, and even an Iron Man balloon. Owner Sean Beaver compared the size and scope of the kites to the kind of balloons at the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. Beaver has been passionate about flying kites since he was a kid and has never stopped. If you go, it is the Balloon Glow and Great American Kites event at Hawkeye Downs, 4400 6th Street Southwest in Cedar Rapids, from 6 to 10 on Tuesday. It will feature tethered hot air balloons, giant kites, and a concert by Elizabeth Von Presley. Tickets are $20 for pods holding up to 6 people. Gates open at 6. Soft-sided coolers with outside food and beverage are allowed, but do not bring alcohol. Alcohol, food, and beverages are available for purchase on the ground. No smoking, no pets, no fireworks, and no sparklers. And also from the Gazette, Hamilton and more head to Des Moines. Broadway is returning to Des Moines. Opening the Willis Broadway series after the Civic Center's pandemic shutdown is The Band's Visit, the 2018 Tony Award winner for Best Musical. Show dates are October 12 to 17. Hamilton also isn't giving away its shot, returning to Des Moines for an extended stay, May 17 to June 5, 2022. Here's the lineup from the previously delayed season. The Band's Visit, October 12 to 17. Bernadette Peters in concert, April 30th, 2020. Riverdance, the 25th anniversary show, June 10 to 12, 2022, and My Fair Lady, August 2 to 7, 2022. The current Willis Broadway series features Tootsie, February 8 to 13, Rent, March 11 to 12, Hadestown, March 22 to 27, 2022, and Hamilton. Also, Harper Lee's To Kill a Mockingbird, August 23rd to 28, 2022, and on into 2023. Other events are listed. Season tickets are available to purchase or renew at dmpa.org, in person at the Civic Center ticket office, or by phone 515-246-2300. Ticket sales for single tickets will go on sale at a later time. Lastly, to finish out a little bit of information in the weather category, scattered storms possible today, hot and windy with a high of 94. Our normal for this time of year is 82 for a high, 61 for a low. The record high was set in 1918 at 99 degrees, the record low in 1947 at 47 degrees. There's a chance of strong storms this evening, but there also is a chance that storms won't be able to form. Why such a dramatic difference? It's all about the cap. Under normal conditions, the temperature decreases as you go up through the atmosphere. This means that warm air is able to freely rise, form clouds and thunderstorms. If the atmosphere is capped, There is a warm layer of air aloft with relatively cooler air under it. This creates a layer that holds back upward cloud development. Energy keeps building up underneath, but until the cap is broken, storms aren't able to form. If something breaks the cap, explosive storm development can occur under the correct conditions. We're in a heat advisory this afternoon. Stay safe and stay clear of storms. And that does it for today's reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette. For today, I'm your reader, Kathleen. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, anytime. Thanks for listening, and have a great, safe day.